out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 8th of March, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Thursday, we're joined by Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, who made an excellent edition of the Orthodox Nationalist yesterday, which I do recommend everybody listen to if they haven't already. It was one of his very best. And today we're going to be discussing one of the subjects in it. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Yes, thank you for that compliment. I took a lot of time with this. I wanted it to be as powerful as I'm capable of.
Well, it's very good. I think it was very successful. I really wasn't prepared for all the statistics and all the obvious thought that had actually gone into that. It's different subject matter to what you usually go into. And I don't think anybody could argue with the points that you were raising in it. And some of the examples of Jewish lobbying, I mean, they're just fantastic, really, really good research, and it was stuff that I hadn't actually heard of before. And today, as I say, we're going to be talking about one particular character in it. Do you want to give an outline to the listeners before we begin of the particular case that we're going to be talking about?
Yeah, it has to do with Shlomo Rubashkin, member of the Chabad Hasidic sect. Him and a bunch of other millionaires built the largest kosher slaughterhouse in a small town in Iowa called Postville. I've been following this story from the day it opened in, I believe it was 2007, 2008. I'm sorry, no, several years before then, 2005. I can't remember precisely when it opened, but it wasn't that long before the ICE, the Customs Enforcement, fell upon it. And it was the largest raid to get rid of illegal immigrants in American history. These Jews moved out to a town that had no idea what a Jew was. They got two or three guys on the city council. They got millions of dollars in state tax breaks. And they proceeded to run this kosher slaughterhouse. And it really was a slaughterhouse for people as much as it was for animals. There isn't an advocacy group in the world that hasn't come down on them here. He's really, you know, this man is a sicko. He's pushed way too far. And the court cases all took place in 2008. He was arrested and convicted on something like there were, believe it or not, there were several thousand, charges, separate charges against him, actually 9,311. And they whittled that down to 82 or 83. And, he was convicted on, about 80 counts of financial fraud. Now, other members of that, you know, management and employees, they took the fall for stuff like the maltreatment of animals. I mean, they were killing them, but, you know, they were kept in very horrible conditions. Child labor was common. And this is the thing that's significant to us. They set up shop here. They would be one of the biggest employers in the county, really in that part of the state. And they didn't hire a single white man. They brought in about 300 Guatemalans and Mexicans. This town didn't know what to do with these people. They never even, you know, they were completely isolated from this kind of thing. And they're all illegals. And so they were getting paid roughly $6 an hour. The New York Times, very sympathetic to them, ran articles about the child labor law violations. They were working these 12 and 13-year-old kids to the point of near death. And It's, you know, what they've done to the town is outlandish. Once the raid in 2008 got rid of several hundred of these Guatemalans, they still wouldn't hire white people. They went to the Somalian community in Canada. And then when that didn't work out, because the Mexicans and the Somalians were at war with one another, two gangs formed. This little town, can you imagine? And they're fighting each other in the streets. The younger kids of the investors, Jewish kids of the investors, you know, 14, 15, were involved in the meth trade and ecstasy and pushing drugs there. And then when that didn't work out, they still wouldn't hire white people. They went to the Pacific island of Palau, which I never even heard of before, to bring these people in to work at the plant. I don't know if they poked holes in the box or not when they brought them in, but they didn't last the winter. It turns out they didn't bother to tell them how cold it gets in Iowa. These are very ignorant, you know, country people. Palau has a population of 20,000. They didn't hire a single white person except the one who took the fall, the plant's human resources. The only non-Jew or non-illegal in the area, Laura Althaus, took the fall from the mall, and she arranged a guilty plea, all this stuff, your child labor and forging documents and all that kind of thing. But they didn't stop there. Adding insult to injury, this guy was put away for 27 years. And the press went crazy. And the legal community went crazy. Half of the attorneys general of the states, former federal attorneys general, came down hard on the judge and on the prosecutor, saying that this is anti-Semitism, this is outrageous. They're accusing the judge of all kinds of malfeasance, which isn't true. They want to get him a new trial. And in the meantime, the town now has about 50% unemployment or more. Gang wars have destroyed the town, and real estate value, taxable real estate, is less than half of its value from before the Jews moved in. And the reason I think this is very important is that it is a miniature version of what the Jews do everywhere. This is what we mean by white genocide. This is what we mean by replacement. It's a microcosm. In one little town in Iowa, all the elements are there, what they've been doing for 1,000 years. And the, you know, the worst part about it is how every elite organization has said that this man is a hero. This man has done nothing wrong. You know, the prosecutor eventually had to take early retirement because of the pressure. The press, of course, isn't reporting the whole story. And in the meantime, this little town is completely destroyed. And I think it deserves a lot more attention than what it's getting. It is a microcosm of the Jewish mind.
Well, is even more than that as well, is all the lobbying that the Jews have gone to since he was jailed, which has resulted in Donald Trump freeing this guy that did all this and ruined the town. And you've provided me with a few articles here, so I've put them together so that we can take some quotes from them and then go into it a little bit more. And we'll start with the reason why this is now in the news. President Donald Trump in December last year commuted the sentence of an Iowa kosher meatpacking executive who had been sentenced to 27 years in prison for money laundering, marking the first time that he has used this presidential power. The decision to intervene on behalf of Shalom Rubashkin, who ran the Iowa headquarters of a family business that was the country's largest kosher meat processing company, came at the urging of numerous members of Congress and a long list of high-ranking law enforcement officials who argued that the sentence was far too harsh for a first-time non-violent offender. The action was encouraged by bipartisan leaders from across the political spectrum, from Nancy Pelosi to Orrin Hatch, the White House said. This bipartisan group of more than 100 former high-ranking law enforcement and Justice Department officials included multiple former attorneys general, as well as prosecutors, judges, and legal scholars. More than 30 current members of Congress also submitted letters to the White House supporting a review of Rubashkin's case. Well, what do you think was the uniting factor in this bipartisan group? Do you think there might have been an ethnic component to this group, making it not so bipartisan after all? What do you say to that, Matt?
I have a tendency to believe that no one would care about this case if this guy were from Germany or Afghanistan. He is part of a very powerful Jewish sect, and he pushed too far. He was so outrageous, and now they're doing damage control. The claim is that the judge met with prosecutors before the trial. Now, it happens to be true, except Judge Linda Reed, who's still sitting, federal judge, under intense pressure now, because of the huge number of arrests. You know, all told, there's like 500 people arrested here in this, you know, sparsely populated area. The bench had to reshuffle its judges to make sure that they had enough to meet the need. All of a sudden, there's all these people in serious federal trouble. And so she did meet with the prosecutor, but was very scrupulous about not talking about the case, only about access. You know, we're going to have a temporary courthouse here, a temporary courthouse there, that kind of thing. And this is where the lobbying goes into effect, because the American Civil Liberties Union has gone so far as to say that this has made the judge an arm of the prosecution. This real over-the-top rhetoric, the breakdown, the crisis in the separation of powers. I mean, this is what they're saying. Over, and it was a technicality. If it was any other case, it would be understandable. Rubashkin brought this all on himself anyway. It's unavoidable and understandable. There was no bias here whatsoever. And the overkill, the rhetorical overkill, shows you really that they've really thrown everything but the kitchen sink at this judge. And at this poor prosecutor. And this Linda Reed deserves some support, because she's in some serious trouble with these people.
What about the bipartisan group? Have we got any Jewish names in this bipartisan group? I am Nancy Pelosi. That's a Jewish name. Did you find any more in there?
Dianne Feinstein. But generally speaking, these are your typical Shabbos Goy senators and congressmen. The National Association for Criminal Defense Lawyers signed this brief. The Washington Legal Foundation, 86 former federal judges. Two FBI directors, one Solicitor General, the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, the Washington Legal Foundation, 40, get this, legal ethics professors, the Association of Professional Responsibility in Law, all of you, what do they care over this very minor issue? This proves without doubt the power of elite Jewish networking and what they'll do when one of their people is in trouble.
Well, you've been learning a lot about this as well in Ted Midward's series on Henry Ford's The International Jew, all about the way that the Jews get together and they form these groups and they put their goyish front men out there, and when what they say, these Shabbos Goy have to do for them, that they have to advocate for them, and that's what we've got here. So it's not a bipartisan group; it's a pro-Jewish group. It's all the people that are pro-Jewish on both sides of Congress and in all these organizations, and these organizations are set up by Jews as well, like the ACLU. And there's another point to this as well. I mean, we are being told that the sentence was just for money laundering, that he is a non-violent criminal, that people get far less for murder, etc., etc. So let's have a look at what really happened. And this is, again, this is a quote from the article, from another article. Rubashkin was convicted in 2009 for submitting fake invoices to a bank that made agri-processors' finances appear healthier than they were, so that it could borrow more. His prosecution came after federal authorities rounded up 389 undocumented immigrants in 2008, more than 20 of them minors, who described a long list of abhorrent working conditions, including 12-hour shifts without overtime pay and exposure to dangerous chemicals. A spokesman for a food workers' union compared it to scenes from Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. Rabashkin and other company executives faced a range of charges, including conspiracy to harbour undocumented immigrants for profit and more than 9,000 child labour law violations. He was accused of helping workers obtain fraudulent identity cards and paying employees in cash under the table, among other offences. Eventually, prosecutors zeroed in on financial crimes, alleging Rabashkin laundered money through a secret bank account and submitted fake documents to banks so that he could borrow more. He was acquitted of the child labour claims, but convicted on 86 counts of federal bank fraud and money laundering. The immigration charges were dismissed voluntarily by prosecutors, and his appeal was rejected by the US Supreme Court. Well, I know that there are other knock-on effects of everything that he caused. I mean, you were talking about some of those earlier, about what happened in the town. But, I mean, what are some of the other things that were caused by this, by his scam?
Well, the reason that the prosecution dropped the other charges, non-financial charges, and this is kind of odd because, first of all, it was dismissed without prejudice. Meaning in American legal terms, the case actually has merit against them and it can be filed in the future. And they actually said, this is a direct quote here, dismissal will avoid an extended and expensive trial, conserve limited resources, and lessen the inconvenience to witnesses, end quote, which is very odd. In other words, the system is overloaded. There, of course, is the very fact that the corporation as an institution pled guilty to all of these things and that Rabashkin controlled it directly and was there every day means that he's guilty of this stuff. For him to say that he didn't know, you know, which has got to be his defense, it's laughable. He was there every day and was enforcing these draconian labor laws. And this is what happens when you bring in, it's why they love the illegals. Because they, you could do whatever you want to them. Now, there's something else. The press went bonkers initially because he was denied bail. November of 2009. And the press said, oh, this is outlandish. He's not violent. Ah, one thing that wasn't reported at the time is that when they raided his house, they found a bag, $20,000 in cash, passports under various names, a document about the law of return. In other words, he was fleeing to Israel. And, you know, of course, you know, you could flee there with no problem and he can't be extradited. So he had his plane tickets bought. And so that judge was dismissed and they brought up the bail case with another judge. And under heavy pressure, he was given $500,000 bond, but he had to wear an ankle bracelet. So the important thing to note is that these charges were dismissed without prejudice. He wasn't acquitted in the sense that there was a trial and, you know, all the jurors said he's innocent. That's not what happened. They were dismissed without prejudice because according to that quote I just gave you, the court system was overloaded. They couldn't handle it. But they say without prejudice, which means, yes, there is merit to this case. And it can be open in the future. This manufactured outrage might just be a way of preventing that in the future.
So he was guilty of all those other crimes, but they just didn't prosecute him for them because they said, "Oh, we can't afford the time to do that. So we'll just prosecute him for this bank fraud and leave the thousands of others." So it's not like he's just being pardoned for his bank fraud. Well, let's see if anyone has spoken out about this. When Trump commuted this modern-day Fagin sentence, and we have former prosecutor Bob Teague, who retired in 2011 after serving as a prosecutor and spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Iowa. And he said that Trump's decision to commute Rabashkin's sentence makes no sense, given Trump's repeated promises to get tougher on illegal immigration. And don't forget, 380 illegal immigrants were found working on his premises. Tigg said that every court that looked at Rybaskin's sentence had concluded that it was fair, and he suggested that former Justice Department officials and lawmakers who supported leniency were unaware of the facts of the case. The outrage is backwards, he said. Can you remember anything about anyone speaking up about this at the time, Matt? Were people saying this was just, and this Bob Tigg, do you remember anything about him?
Well, I mean, he retired, I think, because of this. He wasn't that old of a man. They called him everything. The district court, the federal court in St. Louis, which was their initial appellate jurisdiction, said, no, it's just, we're not going to hear it. They went to the Supreme Court. Believe it or not, they said, no, we're not going to hear it. And the grounds, then the Supreme Court did it without comment. I've read their appeal. And it simply says, because of these logistical meetings between the judge and the prosecution, therefore the trial wasn't fair. It's not taken seriously. So he's lost, in other words. So despite the incredible pressure on the court system from every elite organization you could think of, he still lost. And so making this kind of a fuss, he went back to Brooklyn once he was released to a hero's welcome. They named a local yeshiva in Iowa after him. And of course, ultimately, what it comes down to is that that town is completely destroyed. No one, you know, it's rough. I mean, the immigrant gangs actually control it now. Those cops don't know what they were doing with these guys. The drugs are out of control. They've destroyed that town. It's worthless now. It's completely, it's a shadow of what it used to be. Real estate values have plummeted because of all of this. And this, of course, is not being discussed in the press.
So it's the effect on the community. The effect on the community is, the effect on the community is far more than any of the crimes that he's alleged to have committed, isn't it? It's what it's done to the community that there's been no justice for.
Yeah, you brought in these armies of immigrants, Somalian, Haitian, I mean, whatever they can get their hands on, who hate each other, on this little tiny town. Then they form gang, and now they don't have jobs. So what in the heck are they going to do? They're telling you that the town is, you know, it's this is one of the reasons, of course, it's not really in the press. And this is clearly the obvious result of what Rybaskin did. And this is why he has earned that sentence. He should go back to jail, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, certainly. I'm sure the people in the town there are going to be absolutely furious at Trump commuting his sentence like that. You've got all these illegal immigrants that are still there that have got nothing to do but sell drugs and prostitutes. Well, let's have a look and see what the prosecutors had to say about the trial at the time. Shalom Rybaskin deserves the prison time he received Tuesday in federal court, prosecutors said, after a judge sentenced the former Eastern Iowa meatpacking executive to 27 years. Bob Tigg, a spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office, said the massive financial fraud scheme at Agri Processors Incorporated cries out for a sentence like this. Rybaskin, 50, was sentenced in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids and ordered to pay $27 million in restitution to banks and a cattle provider who was caught in the scheme. Rybaskin was convicted of 86 fraud-related federal crimes in November for his part in an effort to defraud the plant's lenders to collect advances on a loan. The plan collapsed after a May 2008 raid at the Postville plant that forced the owners to file for bankruptcy. Prosecutors, who have seldom spoken publicly since the immigration raid, said the fraud case ranked among the largest ever in Iowa's Northern District. It is a lengthy sentence, Tigg said, but he earned a lengthy sentence. It is hard to get a 27-year sentence for a white-collar crime. It is very difficult. Tigg said Rybaskin's crimes differed from other high-profile white-collar cases, with lesser sentences because of his actions. U.S. District Judge Linda Reed concluded in her ruling that Rybaskin led the fraud, involved others in the plot, and lied at his trial. Teague said Rabushkin consistently refused to cooperate with authorities. Assistant U.S. Attorney Peter Deegan Jr., one of three prosecutors in the case, said financial crimes kept surfacing as investigators dug into the plant's books. Rabushkin's money laundering through a local school and grocery store hindered but did not stop the investigation, he said. You've got such a wide range of criminal activity here, Deegan said. The case just kept building and building and building. Every time you turned over another rock, there was another crime being committed. And usually it led to Shalom Rabushkin. So there's no example here at all of why this guy should have his sentence commuted. They're saying that he really didn't get enough. And it's very, very hard to get a sentence like 27 years. And it reflects the gravity of the crimes that he carried out. And now we've got Donald Trump saying, here you go, we'll let you out. We've got a bipartisan group of Jews and Jewish lovers that have said, we've got to let this guy out. And he has. He's bowed to pressure. It really does show just how much power these Jews wield, doesn't it, Matt?
That's exactly it. They did this initially with Obama, and he said no. When Trump was elected, he said yes. And the thing is that Rabushkin, being a multimillionaire, of course, gives to both parties, but he hates conservatism and republicanism. He hates everything that that Donald Trump stands for. So why, other than that level of power, would Trump even care? So it's just pure power. And once this guy really just made a mess of things, and remember, these other charges are still pending, the child labor and everything else. The company's already pled guilty here. So I'm not sure if they, because without prejudice, mean they can retry, bring another case against him. He's probably going to, take off if that's the case. The thing to remember too, and I remember when this company first opened, the local population were so dumb. Well, they were simple. They said, "Oh, Jews! Oh, I'm a big Seinfeld fan. Oh, great, they're welcome here." And they take advantage of that kind of simplicity to come in, And they were wonderful. They were friendly and everything else. And then the real stuff happened. They promised to end unemployment by hiring all of these locals. And they didn't hire a single guy. There's unemployment there. It's 50%. And they claim that they can't find workers for their plant. And the fact that they would go so far as Palau in the Pacific to get non-white labor shows you the obsession, that the hatred of white people here.
And also,
and so that's the issue.
Well, it also shows their loyalty to one another. I mean, from that same article, we've just heard of the crimes that he's committed, how hard it's been to get him prosecuted. But that wasn't the end of the story, because right after that judgment, defense lawyers vowed to appeal and railed against the sentence in a press conference with at least 100 of Rabushkin's Orthodox Jewish supporters. Several in the group toted signs in front of the television cameras. One sign read, 27 years for overstating assets. That makes sense, OMG. While this may appear to be the end of the case, it is not, defense lawyer Guy Cook said. It is indeed the beginning of the case. It is a round one, if you will. Bob Barr, a former Georgia congressman who joined Rabushkin's legal team for the appeal, said the sentence was unjust, unnecessary, and unreasonable. He held up a copy of Reed's ruling and said, "This will not stand." Rabushkin showed little emotion when the decision was read. And I'm not surprised he showed little emotion. He knew his Jewish friends would continue to lobby for him in Congress and elsewhere until they got the case overturned and got him freed. After all, Jews have a right to take anything that belongs to the Goyim, and no Jews should ever be subject to Gentile justice, according to the Talmud. But funnily enough, this used to be the other way around, and no Christians could ever be subservient to Jews. For the first 1,000 years of the church, after Constantine made it the religion of the empire, And this protected us from Jews like Shalom taking advantage of our trusting nature and led to the Jews moving elsewhere into Caesarea and from there into Europe. That now they have been emancipated and made equal citizens with us, they are free to carry on the same business practices that Shalom did, and they are free to infiltrate our government and establishment to ensure that any who do get caught are soon released. This is not one of Donald Trump's better moves, I don't think, Matt, but at least it proves that everything we say about the Jewish lobby is true. Matt, thanks for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Alison Shablow. God bless and hail victory.